tonight starring Skitch Henderson, Shirley Harmer, and the Texter Singers. This is Radcliffe Hall, and tonight on this Best of All series, we're bringing you a special program saluting the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers on its 40th anniversary. Director, Skitch Henderson.
Thank you, Kenneth Banghart, and welcome everybody to what I think is going to be an unusual and colorful program. Now, tonight we're going to talk about ASCAP, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. You'll meet such great personalities in the musical field as Richard Rodgers, Otto Harbach, John Golden, Irving Berlin, and the great singing star, Mr. Eddie Fisher. In fact, here's Dr. Fisher right now.
Thank you, Skitch, but I'm afraid I don't fit with men who have written such wonderful songs. I don't write them, I just sing them.
Well, then you sing them in the very best style, Eddie. Songwriters need singers, just as singers need songwriters, obviously. So please stay around because we want to hear some of your songs.
Okay, Skitch, I'll be waiting in the wings.
Obviously, Radcliffe, I had a lapse of memory, so if you'll forgive me, we'll continue with the show. We'll be meeting them, all these people, as our program goes along. But right now, Eddie, I'd like to think for a moment about our musical heritage, if I might. Music has been a part of our lives as far back as we know anything about history, and I suppose even farther than that. We know through research that the Chinese were writing songs back as far as 2000 B.C., right, Radcliffe?
That's true, Skitch, and I serve you gentlemen this evening with pardonable pride. But here's one of those melodies as it was heard nearly 4,000 years ago. A Chinese song nearly 4,000 years old. As the years went by, men all over the world made music. Here's a Greek melody from the period of the 4th century B.C., the days when Athens was in all her glory. Go to the music of the revolutionary period in American history. During the Middle Ages, music in our tradition was kept alive mainly by the church. Of course, the troubadours and minnesingers told stories in song, and in merry old England, strolling players piped the tunes for country dances. One of the first dance melodies here in America was a lively reel called Nancy Dawson. Back in the days when the lads were marching off to fight for independence to the music of the fife and drums, our first war song was born. That was back about 1775. It was called Johnny Has Gone for a Soldier. Time went on, popular music became more and more a part of our national life. It was played in the ballrooms of southern plantations, on riverboats, in minstrel shows, and in vaudeville theaters. Nearly every American home came to have a cottage organ, a player piano, or a phonograph. Town bands played in the village square, and pianolas tinkled at skating rinks and amusement parks. After the turn of this century, the songs of one man were hummed and whistled and sung all over the nation, more and more frequently. That man was Victor Herbert, who gave us so many unforgettable songs. Songs like The March of the Toys from Babes in Toyland. The March of the Toys.
Tonight I'm telling the story with baton and with the gentlemen of the NBC Orchestra, musically about ASCAP, but of course to tell the true story about ASCAP, it's necessary to talk to the men that provide all the material that we use. In popular material, I suppose that the name Richard Rogers means more not only to guys like myself that work for a living in music, but the listening public probably means more than any other name. And a man by the name of Otto Harbach is in the studio with us tonight, who is also one of the great names in this fine field of music as a lyricist, a collaborator with all the great writers. First off, I'll say good evening to both
Hello.
Of you.
Okay. How do you do, sir?
Glad to see you. Mr. Harbach, I'd like to cover just a little bit the very beginnings of ASCAP. Actually, they always say the Victor Herbert story, but nobody says what happened. What did happen, actually?
Men like Herbert found that cafes, etc., were playing his music without any reference to him, and he felt that he should be paid for the public performance for profit of his stuff, just as they'd been doing in Europe a great many years.
Approximately when was the society organized?
Well, the absolute date of the organization was 1914.
Mm-hmm. Dick Rogers, when did you join? This sounds strange to say this to you, but when did you become a member of ASCAP?
I joined ASCAP in 1925. What ASCAP has done for me and for my fellow writers is a tremendous, tremendous good. It's men like Otto Harbach and Victor Herbert who did go to bat for us all originally. And I wonder if these men, like Otto, know how grateful we all are, how much this still means to us and our children.
Dick, as to your aspirations at the time that you joined ASCAP, in what direction were you going then? Were you getting ready to write for the theater?
Well, I have a very curious answer to that probably not too many people would be able to give you. I think I started in one direction when I was about 3 years old, and I'm still going in it.
Really?
Yeah. I had a couple of parents who loved the musical theater deeply. And the really happy hours in our house were spent around the piano with my mother playing. She played beautifully. And both my mother and father singing. And they used to go to the musical shows, a great many of which I was too young to see. But maybe Mr. Harbach wouldn't mind admitting that he saw some of them.
Probably wrote some of them.
I'm sure he did. And they would come home with the book of the score. It was a custom in those days to sell them in the lobby. And they would come home with the chocolate soldier. And the chocolate soldier would sit on the piano for 3 or 4 weeks until we all knew the overture and all the songs and right through the finale. And I think at that time, this is what I wanted to do with my life. And now, I said I was 3 then, I'm 49 years older than that. And that's still what I want to do. I want to write these things.
And that's very obvious, Dick, by the music that you bring to our repertoire and the repertoire of ASCAP every year. You mean you didn't go to college and study medicine? Isn't that the story they always have when they talk to songwriters? They studied law or medicine?
Yes, or they shine shoes or something. No, I went to college and wrote musical shows, curiously enough. I wasn't terribly interested in geometry, but I was awfully interested in the varsity show at Columbia. And after I'd written 2 of them, I felt that Columbia couldn't teach me anything else. And I went to the Institute of Musical Art and studied music.
Mr. Harbach, you wrote with many great men in music. You collaborated on many great shows. What was your beginning? Let's go back to that history of ASCAP.
Well, of course, I have always been very jealous of these men who made a beeline for what they wanted to do in life, because my life, for 30 years of my life, was a sort of a hummingbird existence, going from this to that. For instance, first I spent 6 years as a teacher in a college.
Teaching music?
No. Teaching English and public speaking. And then after that, I, for 6 years, was in the advertising business with George Batten Company. That was before they became Batten, Barton, Durstein, and Osborne.
Which has probably changed since we
were on there. Stealing a little of their time, I began to fool around with writing scripts and lyrics, so that in 1906, a piece that I'd had something to do with, which was Three Twins, was produced in Chicago and looked like a hit and was brought to New York. It proved that it was a hit. Now, that was the beginning. Then that gave me courage to drop the advertising business. And ever since then, I've been fooling around Broadway.
Of course, the collaboration that I especially prize is your collaboration with Mr. Jerome Kern. When did that start?
First thing we did was a play called Sonny.
And a great song called Who from Oscar.
Yeah. Needless to say, Oscar Hammerstein. They called him Oscar the Second. I call him Oscar the Great. He collaborated with me on the book and lyrics of that particular piece. And since then, of course, I did 2 other shows with Jerome. One was The Cat and the Fiddler, and the other was Roberta. I mention those because there were others, but they didn't fare so well.
Could I interrupt this for a second?
Yes, indeed.
As a songwriter?
Mr. Rogers.
I used to study Jerome Kern. The way the medical students that Skitch was talking about a little while ago studied Grey's Anatomy. I had a weekly allowance when I was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowance went not for candy, but for going to Saturday matinees and sitting in the gallery, which, as you remember, you could do for 50 cents. And for another quarter, you could probably get an usher to put you in the first balcony. And that was the way my Saturday afternoons were spent, at all the Jerome Kern shows, because I had a very deep emotional understanding of what this man had to say in the way of music. And I literally worshipped at his feet. And I think what he did for me as a composer is in a large measure responsible for what I've been able to do for myself since.
Well, I think you picked out a great teacher, because Jerry Kern, to me, was an impeccable workman. I don't think he ever wrote a careless line in his life.
He wouldn't know how.
He wouldn't know how to leave a melody that dipped wasn't exactly the way he wanted. And as a lyric writer, anybody who wrote lyrics with Jerome learned a lot about lyrics. Because there again, he was an impeccable critic. Did you have any close associations with some of the other men? For instance, Vincent Newman. You knew Vincent, didn't you?
I did, yes. Yeah. Surely, I knew Vincent very well. I knew a great many of them, curiously enough, because I started in terribly early, Otto.
Yes, I know.
You know, I had my first show on Broadway when I was a freshman at Columbia.
That's
when I was 17 years old.
That's wonderful.
And this is a long, patient history in show business, though I'm not very old. And I knew some of the older men very well. And one of my great regrets is that I never had the opportunity of working in a show with you. But I think that you will remember that I tried. I went up to see you in Westchester.
Oh, yes, I remember that distinctly.
And I was held at bay by the largest, most vicious German shepherd dog I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
I was shown into a living room, and a very beautiful one, by a maid, and in came a dog. And I wasn't allowed to move backwards or forwards until you showed up about 15 minutes later. I don't like to say this in front of Mr. Harbach, because it's too easy to be flattering, but I've had long, long talks with Oscar Hammerstein about Otto Harbach. And I think that this should be said publicly, even though he's listening, that this is the man who taught all of us where to go.
Well, I can think of no finer tribute, and I just want to take this opportunity on behalf of myself and all the gentlemen here in the orchestra, all of us doing the show tonight, and on behalf of ASCAP, I want to thank you, gentlemen, Mr. Otto Harbach, and of course, Mr. Richard Rogers. Thank you, gentlemen, very, very much for coming by tonight.
Thanks for letting me.
Very nice to have you.
Talk to you.
Thank you.
It wasn't only popular music that profited from the establishment of ASCAP. The creation of classical music has been greatly encouraged by the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Now, one of our earlier classical composers to achieve enduring fame was Mr. Edward McDowell. The spirit of his genius is remembered not only in his music, but in the continued existence of the great McDowell colony, which was founded in 1910. At that colony in the New Hampshire mountains, artists in every field are helped in their creative work, which contributes to the culture of our great nation. Throughout the years, the composer's widow, Marion McDowell, has been the leading spirit in maintaining the very famous McDowell colony in Peterborough. But something of his spirit still lingers on there, just as it lingers all over the world, in compositions of his like this that I'm going to play with the orchestra now, My Steinway, To a Wild Rose. Gentlemen, if you please. Thank you.
Back over the history of ASCAP, we can really recall the story of our own lives. The songs that ASCAP writers have given us reflect the past in a way that nothing else can. For instance, if you're old enough, you have to remember the early 1920s when you hear this song by Raymond Egan and Richard Whiting. Lillian Gish was starred in Way Down East at the local movie house, flappers were bobbing their hair and rolling their stockings, the Ouija board was the latest fad, and everywhere you went you heard Japanese Sandman.
Here's the Japanese Sandman, sneaking on with a do. Just an old second-hand man, he'll buy your old day from you. He will take every sorrow of the day that's through, and he'll give you tomorrow just to start life anew. When you wake, and you'll be a bit older with a new day you make. Here's the Japanese Sandman, trading silver for gold. Just an old second-hand man, trading new days for old. Then you'll feel a bit older the dawn when you wake,
and you'll be a bit older with a new day you make.
Here's the Japanese Sandman, trading silver for gold. Just an old second-hand man, trading old days for new.
That was Japanese Sandman, sung by the Texter Singers. And back in that same period, there was another great song. Like many of our biggest hits, it was adapted from a classical melody by Chopin. Here's Shirley Harmer, the popular MGM recording star, to sing, I'm Always Chasing Rainbows.
Chasing rainbows, watching clouds drifting by. My schemes are just like all my dreams, ending in find the sunshine. I always look and find the rain. Some fellas make a winning sunshine. I never even make a game. Believe me, I'm always chasing rain.
We heard from Richard Rodgers a little bit ago, and of course you can't play popular music very long without including one of his songs. And that's our pleasure right now. And the song is one of his greatest, Falling in Love with Love. Just heard the Richard Rodgers song, Falling in Love with Love, with our host, Skitch Henderson, at the piano. We'll be back in just a moment with such guests as Eddie Fisher, John Golden, and Irving Berlin. Part two of Best of All will follow after a brief pause for station identification. Stay tuned for more of Skitch Henderson and Best of All on most NBC radio stations. Radcliffe Hall presenting part two of Best of All. Tonight starring Skitch Henderson, Shirley Harmer, and the Texter Singers. Saluting ASCAP, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, on its 40th anniversary. And here's your host, Skitch Henderson.
We've already met Richard Rodgers and Otto Harbach tonight, and we'll soon be meeting John Golden, Eddie Fisher, and Irving Berlin. But since our program is dedicated to ASCAP and ASCAP is dedicated to music, perhaps we'd better hear some of the music right now. Here's one of the great all-time ASCAP hits, You Were Meant for Me. Julie?
We have with us tonight the Dean of American Producers, the first treasurer of ASCAP, Mr. John Golden.
To talk about the history of ASCAP, of course, is a great pleasure for me in the music business, and especially talking to Mr. Golden, who's a very special treasurer, inasmuch as you mentioned that he was the first treasurer of the organization. Mr. Golden, I'd like to ask you how this came about.
Well, I wasn't looking when they elected me.
You weren't looking?
No, it happened. We were meeting in a corner of the grill room of the Lambs.
We, whom do you mean by
well,
we?
Well, I mean those of the founders that we could gather to talk about this fantastic idea. On occasions we'd meet and try to pump some sense into this dream, which none of us believed would ever amount to much. It was originally the notion of a music publisher. His name was George Maxwell. Maxwell was a representative of Recording Company, Italian publishers. They did the Biancavallo's music, and they did the Italian composers. Well, and this man happened to observe the fact that we had in our law statutes something to the effect that wherever a song or a piece of any sort was used for profit, there should be paid to the author thereof a small fee. I think it was copied from the French laws called petit droit at the time. And Maxwell and my lawyer, a lawyer named Nathan Burkham, brought a crowd of us together in the Lambs and said, gentlemen, we think these laws hold good here, and that you may receive a small fee for the use of your songs, wherever they're played, whether they're played in restaurants or hotels or movie houses. The pianists in the movie houses, in the thousands of music houses we had in those days, would go through a routine playing every song that came into their heads, but they were mostly written by American songwriters. And it was Burkhan and George Maxwell who said, those are being played for profit. Those two words, for profit, are in the law, and we think we can collect for you.
At that time, did each publisher work independently? They had no publisher's organization.
None that I know. I'm sure they didn't. They had none. They had none that I know of. At least, well, I'm sure they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the treasury.
Oh, to come back, yes. We were meeting at the in the grill room of the Lambs, in the corner of the grill room, and I left the group at the moment, and when I left them, they were talking about various officers to be elected. And when I returned, the 8 or 10 founders of ASCAP in that corner of the grill rose politely, put their hands to their chest, bowed, and looking up at me said, "Our treasurer."
How did the treasury start?
Treasury started with nothing. I mean, I was treasurer, but we had no money. I think they gave it to me because I pretended that I had money. I like to pretend that I was a rich young fellow, rich parents and all. And I made a bluff at that as I went along and fooled them enough into making me treasurer. Maxwell was the first president. Victor Herbert was the first vice president. John Golden was the first treasurer. And a man whose name should have been preserved for ages and all time to come because he wrote all the lyrics, let me say, for instance, of Babes in Toyland. But you don't know his name, you listeners. I'll tell it to you. It was Glenn McDonough. And there was never a greater creature in the theater. Now, it began by my investment of $35. That's what ASCAP started with. Aside from some letterheads and paper that were paid for by Mr. Maxwell, I gave $25 to Mrs. Harris, who is still alive to verify this fact. 40 years ago, I gave my own $25 to her for the rent of one room over the lobby of the Fulton Theater. I paid $10 to a man for the rent of a desk and two chairs, and that was ASCAP's beginning, $35. That was $35 was the investment made to bring in, as I understand it, a business that nets $20 million this year. They gave me a party, and Dean Taylor gave me a nice clock, but they've never paid the $35.
You're still on the books?
I'm still on the books for $35, they'll tell you.
Mr. Golden, how did you go about making your organization known after you had, such as you were elected treasurer and all that?
We got some membership cards, you'd call them, And I've forgotten the exact amount on the cards, but I think it was $5 a year.
Now, what was the reaction of the theaters and the cafes where this music was being used?
Oh,
One of my dearest and closest friends was a fellow by the name of Will Hayes, who was hired by the motion picture people, and we weren't speaking at the end of the first 3 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Golden, for this very unusual bit of information about ASCAP, and here's one of your great songs for the 300th anniversary of our own city of New York. The Texter Singers with New York Town, gentlemen.
Of world renown. Everything from everywhere, whatever you want, it's there. From earth or sea or up in the air or down. Look, up there's a high line with a skyline for a crown. Oh, one municipality where every nationality is sure of hospitality in New York Town. Glorious New York Town. Neighbors, every state represented. 8 million neighbors with the civic right demanded. Proud, for they know the worth of their hometown, the greatest city on earth. New York Town, glorious New York Town. New York Town, model of world renown. Everything from everywhere, whatever you want is there. From earth or sea or up in the air or down.
I'd like now to introduce at this time the writer of such well-known songs as melodies like There Are Such Things, Little Old Lady, What a Difference a Day Made, many other songs that we certainly haven't the time to mention tonight. This gentleman is the current and the youngest president of the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Stanley Adams. Good evening, Stanley.
Good evening, and thank you, Skitch Henderson. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the more than 3,900 members of the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, I wish first to express our appreciation to the National Broadcasting Company for this fine tribute to the Society. As you have learned on this show, ASCAP is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. The Society is a democratic organization of the men and women who create and publish the music that is a vital part of our nation's entertainment world. ASCAP does not publish music, nor does it buy or sell music, records, transcriptions, or any other physical property. The Society's chief function is to make available through its licensing program the musical works of its members to all commercial users of music. From that valiant beginning of the late Victor Herbert, John Philip Sousa, Ray Hubble, and the other founding fathers in 1914, the Society has become a growing community of our nation's music talent. As president of ASCAP, I can promise the American people in general, as well as our licensees, that we will continue to encourage the American writers to create new music to nourish the increasing needs of our nation's musical culture.
Thank you. Thank you, and here's Skitch Henderson with all the gentlemen of the orchestra in our company with a medley of songs that are typical, I think, of why ASCAP is so well known and so loved by us. Here first the strings with a great song by a friend of mine, Mr. Chester Kahn, called Make Her Mine. Julie, let's set the pace.
Strings with Make Her Mine, a melody written by Chester Kahn. Here's another great standard with the Texture Singers. Tony, give us the keynote, and here's a beautiful song called Nevertheless. Key?
Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm weak, maybe I'm strong, but nevertheless I'm in love with you. Maybe I'll win, maybe I'll lose, maybe I'm in for crying the blues, but nevertheless I'm in love with you. Somehow I know at a glance the terrible chance
I'm taking.
It's mine at the start, then left with a heart that is breaking.
A heart that's breaking. Maybe I'll live a life of regret. Maybe I'll give much more than I'll get.
Nevertheless, I'm in love with you.
Somehow I know at a glance the terrible chances I'm taking. Fine at the start, then left with a heart that's breaking. Maybe I'll live a life of regret. Maybe I'll give much more than I'll get. But nevertheless, I'm in love with you. I'm in love with you.
Thank you, Keith, and the Texture Singers from Canada, from MGM Records, rather. Here's Miss Shirley Harmer with The Boy Next Door. Shirley?
Boy next door.
you, Miss Shirley Harmer.
You know, when you think it over, the popular songs of the day really mean a lot to us. They express our feelings in the way that we couldn't put them into words. They bring back memories, and somehow they add a little brightness to the world that we live in. That, of course, goes for singers of songs, too, and every now and then a singer comes along who has that certain something that makes him a vital part of the American scene. Right now, I'd like to have you meet a young man who has certainly become one of the great popular singers of all time, Eddie Fisher.
Thank you very much, Skitch. As a singer, it's a very special pleasure to be on a program dedicated to ASCAP. Every singer soon learns that a great deal of any success he has is based on the songs he's given to sing. I know I certainly appreciate the members of ASCAP who have given me the songs that have helped me along the way.
Well, I dare say, Eddie, to reciprocate, some of those members of ASCAP are grateful to you, too. I remember some boosts you've given to such songs as Wish You Were Here, I Need You Now, Oh My Papa, to mention just a few.
Well, I guess, Skitch, that it works both ways. A songwriter needs somebody to sing, and a singer certainly needs the right songs. And when you think of the many old songs that are revived each year, you know they must really have lasting appeal.
Along with that, Eddie, a thing that always amazes me is the way that certain composers can go along year after year turning out great hit songs, while others have turned out only one or two hits in their whole life.
Yes, some of the greatest writers seem to have an understanding for people. Anyway, they put things into words and music that we want to say and want to hear.
There have been a number of composers like that, but of course not too many, and I guess that one that comes to everybody's mind, and certainly to my mind at this time, is Mr. Berlin.
I guess each really great composer contributes something different, something of his own. But surely Mr. Berlin ranks high on anybody's list.
Well, it's pretty hard to believe, Eddie, but his songs have been part of America's life for 45 years. That lets us both out. Me, just barely. But you can't help feeling that the best ones may still be coming along the line.
All you have to do is think of his new pictures, White Christmas and There's No Business Like Show Business. There are songs in those pictures that are as great as he's ever written.
Well, Mr. Fisher, it just so happens that we have one of those songs, a song from White Christmas, a record that's as outstanding as the song itself from RCA Victor, and naturally I'm speaking of Count Your Blessings, and I'm sure that we'd all like to share this, your voice, with the people right now.
When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep, and I fall asleep counting my blessings. When my bankroll is getting small, I think of when I had none at all, and I fall asleep counting my. About a nursery, and I picture curly hairs, and one by one I count them as they slumber in their beds. You're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings. Fall asleep counting your blessing. That
was Count Your Blessings. Of course, I know most of you probably are familiar with that recording from RCA. Probably many of you have it in your own home. Eddie, I want to thank you for coming by tonight, and if you don't mind, I wish you'd step aside for a moment, because we have one of the charter members, certainly we might say one of the great deans of the Society of ASCAP, at this microphone right now. As an encore, it's a pleasure for me to present once again Mr. Irving Berlin. Mr. B, how do you do, sir?
Skitch, I'm delighted to be back with you again. And it's pretty obvious what any member of ASCAP, especially a charter member, could say about that society. The only thing I want to add to what anyone else has said is that I just couldn't exist without ASCAP. I don't think any songwriter today, and that goes for a lot of publishers, could remain in business without what ASCAP is doing for its membership. And not alone that, but I think ASCAP is a wonderful institution for the users of music. Here they have these wonderful catalogs that have been in the control, if that's the right word. But not control, as you know, ASCAP is a non-profit organization.
That's right.
It's being run for its membership, and I've been a member since 1914. I was one of their board of governors, and... Again, in a nutshell, if there was no ASCAP, there could be no Irving Berlin. And that goes for everybody connected with it.
Well, I think, Mr. B, that's about the greatest tribute that any organization could be paid from your voice. Of course, you are, too, in a very unique position because you are both one of our outstanding music publishers in the country and as a composer as well. Mr. B, I want to thank you for coming by on this show tonight. Actually, I'm kind of stealing time from you because you are going to be the star of our show next week on
Skitch,
Mr. Showbiz.
Let's drop the Mr. B. I've been calling you Skitch for so long. Incidentally, how is that beautiful girl of yours?
She's just wonderful, Irving, and I'll be very happy to say hello to her.
And give her my love.
And I'll say hello to you next week at the same time.
You bet.
Next week, when Irving Berlin will return to introduce music from the soundtrack of the new motion picture, There's No Business Like Show Business.
This evening, join the telephone hour on the NBC Radio Network.